in this drama as it unfolds. But let's talk about balance for just a moment, the whole idea or concept of balance. I don't know about you, but I know as I deal with different things and the older that I've gotten, I have found that balance seems to be a lot more important in so many more areas than what I, you know, at one time in my life really thought. Think about how, you know, we really need to. A lot of balance is a really important aspect of life. Operating on extremes, one or the other, in so many, many situations, I'm finding that this doesn't work very well. Right? And so the key is balance. Anybody have any ideas or just think about some situations in life that require balance? Perhaps even more, a lot more than what you might have thought it did at one time. That range is good. What a balance is needed there. Yeah. You know, you've got discipline on one end, you got love on the other end. It requires a fine balance in that, but. Okay. Yeah. I usually find when it comes to balance that I'm usually off balance when I leave it up there. Any other ideas? What kind of situations in life require us to really look for balance? Okay. Balance between those responsibilities. You know, balance is an important factor. More and more in life, I think, sometimes we oftentimes realize. And the reason that I'm mentioning this is because it's also true in our faith, in our relationship with God. Okay? What we really need to be doing is to be balancing the ingredients of faith. In our lives, and that's crucial for us, not only for ourselves and our own personal relationship with God, but it's also crucial as we interact and deal with other people. Okay? We have to, in other words, be able to find a balance of law and love. You've got to be able to balance those two. You also have to be able to balance mercy. If you operate on either spectrum of the extremes of either one of those, then you're going to have problems. Okay? It's going to create a lot of problems. And so the aim of balance spiritually is to be able to treat other people with the same kind of balanced touch that Jesus did. That's what we're going to be looking at in this particular story. So as we're looking at this, I want you to think balance. Okay? Balance. And we find Jesus balancing, as I mentioned a few moments ago, between two extremes in this situation. Now, as I was saying earlier, we looked at all these previous situations that we've been studying thus far, and in this particular situation is somewhat different because Jesus is faced with and is dealing with a person who is caught in the very act of sin. Okay? How are you going to deal with that, Jesus? Okay? So what we're going to look at here is, did Jesus touch? How does he balance the law and love and balance faith or mercy and truth in dealing with this? There are two extremes that we're looking at here. Jesus is, in a sense, kind of caught right in the middle between the two extremes. Okay? On the one one side, on one end of the spectrum, there are overzealous religious leaders who are determined to protect their religious institution. No matter what they have to do, they're going to protect what they have stolen. Okay? On the other extreme, you have a sinful woman in desperate need of grace. Two extremes. Jesus in the middle. And what we will see happening here is Jesus reaching out to both sides, to both extremes, with the very same principle. And as Brother Lynn Anderson puts it, he says, that principle that Jesus teaches is to beware of a view of the law that persecutes you. Beware of a view of the law that persecutes you. So, let's begin by talking about the accusers. Okay? Let's focus in this first part of our study on the folks on one end of the spectrum, the religious leaders, these group of Pharisees, and what is their position? What are they really up to in all of this? This is a group of people who, at that time, felt threatened by this carpenter and his teaching. This carpenter comes along, and he's not a quote-unquote sanctioned rabbi. Okay, he hasn't gone to the best religious schools and, you know, studied under the the teachers and so forth as they're supposed to do. Okay, in order to be recognized as a true rabbi, he's a carpenter. It came from Nazareth. Does anything good come out of Nazareth? Here, this guy's a rabbi. Okay, we know where that's going, right? But they felt threatened by this carpenter. The teachings that he was putting out, which could topple their comfortable religious institutions. So from their perspective, he's got to be stopped. He's got to stop this. The religious leaders of the Jews at that time, I used the term comfortable religion. How would you describe what was going on amongst the Jews at that particular time, especially amongst the Jewish leaders? How would you describe that? Okay, yeah, very legalistic. Okay? Okay? They had a system. Okay? And their system involved following certain rules, certain ways, and doing certain things, and only certain people could do certain things, and everything was tied around not as much the law as it was what? Tradition. Okay? They had their tradition. This is how we do things. This is how things are supposed to work. This is who's supposed to do what, when, and so forth. And any deviation from that was going to cause problems. Okay? And Jesus comes on the scene, and not only is he deviating from that, but what is he doing? Yeah, he's calling that, he's challenging them. I mean, he's calling them things like whitewashed tombs, dead man's bones, hypocrites, things like that. Okay? He's doing things that are not permissible to do. You know, like healing people on the Sabbath. Okay? not only that, but he's gaining a large following. So when you think about that, it's easy to begin to see how they were feeling threatened by this type of thing. Right? He's got to be stopped. If we're not stopping, then we're going to have problems. Notice the contrast between, and for those of you who come in, we're in John chapter 8, okay? Notice the contrast between these two extremes, okay? These religious leaders, these Pharisees, and this sinful woman, okay? And I want you to just try to picture in your mind, if you will, and if you have to, just close your eyes and just try to picture the scenario here as it's unfolding. As they're dragging this woman through the streets, okay, what is going on here? First of all, they were in power. Okay? She was a victim. Hang on to that thought. Right? They were many. A mob, a crowd. He was all alone. Right? They were self-righteous. He was humiliated. Think about that scene as it must have unfolded. Okay. What do we know about this woman? What do we know about
her?
They knew that. I mean, have you ever stopped and thought about how did they, quote unquote, catch her in the very act? Okay. Have you ever thought about this woman? What's her story, in other words? Was this, you know, maybe the first time she'd ever done anything like this? Or was she a woman of ill repute out there on the streets and everybody knew it, and so, there she was, selling her wares, and, they took advantage of that situation. Maybe was she a woman who was in a loveless marriage and was looking for something, and, all of those kinds of scenarios, people can be involved in today, But in other words, here's the reason I want you to think about that. We, we read this story, and it's so cut and dry, isn't it? This woman was caught in the very act of adultery. She's a sinful woman, isn't she? Period. No explanation, isn't it?
Okay. I'm not murder, but I do know how they treated women in that past. And you go over to Google Island, I can't remember what chapter 10 or 17. And Moses had to do it in the very same church. Women, men thought they could just put women away when they got rich. Women did not have any sense of. In some instances, and what I didn't read it, but what I understood, it was treated with indulgence because they were women. That's why men all the time wanted a male child to get on this, And so this is part of the story. should and not always. It's not always. And that limit, and some instances hadn't changed even to this day, over 2,000 years later. And some parts in some countries, which they keep on understanding, that they are left to me.
Do you ever stop to consider someone's choice? Especially if we're looking at and I'm not saying that we have to do that in order to figure out what we're going to do with this person. No, that's not the point. The point is that the person behind the sin is more important than the sin itself. See? And if all we do is look at the situation, the sin itself, and we don't ever really look at the story behind that person and who that person really is, then we can miss the most important aspects of dealing with that person. See, I think sometimes what we want to do is deal with the situation, and we forget that we're dealing with a person. Situations are always easier to deal with if you depersonalize them. Okay? But when you personalize it, if you look at the person involved in it, it can take on a whole different dimension. Again, it's not to excuse behavior, but it's to find that balance. And if we don't look at the person, we only look at the situation, then we're not going to find it. We need to understand, how did they look at this woman? How did these religious leaders, these Pharisees, how did they see her? Okay? Well, you know, first of all, they saw her as a sinner. Alright? The penalty for adultery was death. So therefore, this woman was a sinner. We caught her in the very act of adultery. The law said stone her. That's it. She's a sinner. They really didn't see who she was. Her story and who she was made absolutely no difference to them at all. Okay. She was not the point. Okay? She was just simply a pawn in the major power play. That's how they saw her. Their desire, okay, was to neutralize Jesus' growing influence on the people. Whatever they had to do to accomplish that was their thing, including using another person to accomplish their mission. This woman, to them, was the perfect day for a trap that they had set for Jesus. That's how they saw it. Someone to be used as bait and then discarded. And they felt justified in that view of her because of their understanding of the law of love. You see how unbalanced this thing really is. Okay? We need to take a look at how did they see Jesus. Okay? Not only, you know, take into account their view of the woman, but how did they see Jesus, this group of religious leaders that were trying to get rid of him? How did they see him? Well, as I mentioned earlier, first of all, they saw him as a threat to everything that they had made for themselves. Jesus threatened their lifestyle, their institution of the week. Okay? They saw him as being very popular with the crowd. Why did that take a toll? They wanted to control the crowd, but also because they weren't very popular with the crowds. You see? How did the people really view the religious leaders of their day? What? Yeah, legalistic, strict. They're imposing these rules on us and keep them anyway, and they impose them on us. They don't keep them themselves. And yeah, the religious leaders were not very popular with the people at all. But Jesus was. Jesus challenged their teachings and their interpretation of the law and their status. They have things just the way they want them. And this guy's come along and challenges all of these
things. Well, I don't think they were teaching so much as their understanding of the law, as it was their manipulation of the law.
Okay.
They knew in the court and after the Gulf that first of all, not all was stoned to death. But if they were, then both the man and the woman would not.
Right. I think one of the most important things that we need to understand of their view of Jesus at this point was they saw him as trapped. They had Jesus right where they wanted him. How's he going to get out of this one? Okay? They come to Jesus with this woman. Cast her down in front of him as Jesus is there teaching and so forth. They bring this woman and say, we caught this woman in the very act of adultery. The law says to stone such women, which by the way, the law did not say that. Okay? What do you say? And so their view of Jesus is, we got him now. Okay? We got him. And you know, as you read through the gospel accounts, they were constantly trying to trap Jesus, weren't they? And they had put together a plan. And that's important for you to really look at in understanding what's going on here. You see? They planned this out in order to trap Jesus. And they felt like that they had, you know, this was it. The perfect trap. We have this woman, whatever her story is, whatever her background, however they knew about this woman, they bring her to Jesus knowing that she's guilty of violating the law, knowing what the penalty is. The penalty was death, not necessarily by stoning, but it was death. And as Jerry pointed out, that it was for both people, the man and the woman, not just the woman. Okay? So here's the sin. Here's what the law requires. What do you say? You see, their view was that if Jesus says to stone her, you know, go ahead, let's start stoning her, then he's going to be in trouble with the Romans because the Romans did not allow the Jews to execute people. You see, so they'd be able to solve their problem of getting rid of Jesus by just going to the Romans and saying, hey, you know, look what this guy did. He had this woman killed. He needs to be arrested, taken out of the way. And on the other hand, if Jesus says, no, you can't stone her, you see, he comes up with some, you know, technicality or loophole in the law, you know, then they got this all down here. These legal experts are going to go, no, 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 the law is pretty plain on them. And so now the accusation is Jesus is not following the law of Moses. But where is this credibility? So their view of Jesus is, we got him. He's trapped. There's no way out of this thing. They had him right where they wanted him. How did they see the law? Another thing that would have to consider. How did this group of religious leaders see the law? Well, first of all, they saw the law as being useful. What they told them to do. Somebody mentioned earlier, you know, they told the crowd. If you want to keep people, you know, in line, doing what they're supposed to be doing, then you just impose the law on them, and, you know, and that'll make sure that everybody does what they're supposed to do. You know, all the stuff that's going on, you're the Muslims, you're the jihadists and all that, what's their one of their major things that they're trying to do? What are they trying to impose? Do the law. This strict, legalistic interpretation of the laws of Muslim laws, and it's all designed to control them. That's what they were, that's how they saw the law. It was used to keep people in line. Okay. And here, specifically, they saw the law as a useful tool to get rid of Jesus. So not only was the law good for controlling people, but it was also useful for eliminating your enemies. Okay. But one of the things that we have to consider in looking at this whole situation is what the law was intended for by God. Part that they were missing. Okay. Because any use of the law that did not help people grow closer to God was not from God. Let me say that again. Any use of the law that did not help people grow closer to God did not come from God. God's law was designed and intended to draw people closer to Him in relationship, not to drive a wedge between them and God. And so when the law is interpreted as a way that hurts people instead of helps people or pushes people further away from God than closer to God, then that's not coming from God. If you go all the way back to the Garden of Eden, when Adam and Eve sinned, okay, what was God's immediate response to that? Balanced approach, wasn't it? There was discipline. Okay. You ate, therefore you're going to be punished. Is also salvation, reconciliation. All effort of that going on on God's behalf is to bring us back into relationship with Him. Not to destroy us. If God wanted to destroy us because of sin, you know. And so he certainly would not let sinful stone to die on our behalf while we were still in our country. So in looking at the law, say, God gave the law to help draw people to Him, not to drive them away. You look at Jesus' response to, again, other situations where the Pharisees and teachers of the law are complaining and grumbling about what Jesus is doing. Mark chapter 12, verses 11 and 12. Somebody turn there and be ready to read for us. Mark chapter 2, I'm sorry, I said Matthew 12. It's Matthew 12, 11 and 12. Mark 2 and verse 27. And then Mark 12, 30 and 31. Let's get somebody to read each of those. Who's got Matthew 12, 11 and 12? Concern. Jesus is healing someone, a man with a shriveled hand on the Sabbath.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. And they're objecting to that. Why? Because that's work. And Jesus' response is, wait a minute. If one of you has a sheep that falls into the pit, which one of you just leave it there? I can't get out until next day because it's the Sabbath. He'd say, you wouldn't do that. You know, every single one of you would go and you get that sheep out of the pit, whether it's the Sabbath or not. And how much more important is a man than a sheep? You take care of the sheep if you want to help out. Mark chapter 2, verse 27. What's that?
He said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, and not man for the Sabbath. Therefore, the Son of Man is also Lord of the Sabbath.
God gave the Israelites the Sabbath for what reason? What was it intended for? Yeah, for a day of rest. Yeah. It served two purposes. Number one, to remind them that God created the world in 6 days, and on the seventh day he rested. Okay? And that they were to do the same. It was intended to be a day of reflection upon God and of rest. God gave it to them for their benefit. They had put it all in. Mark chapter 12, verses 30 and 31. Jesus has asked a question. Of all the commandments, here we are dealing with the law again, of all the commandments, what's the most important one? And what's Jesus' response? Who's got that?
You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, with all your mind, and with all your strength. And the second question is this. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. There is no other commandment than the other.
Okay, so here they're fussing about the law, right? You see? And they're trying to be a stickler for the law. And Jesus basically says, look, take all of the law and summarize it this way. God made the law for relationships. That's what it's all about. It's relationships with Him and relationships with one another. And when you lose sight of that, you've lost sight of the law. And they lost sight of that. And that's why their view of the law was so distorted. And that's what allowed them then to use God's law that was intended to help people to bring hurt upon people. And now, think about that, and let's talk about how did they then view sin? Okay. How did they view sin? Their desperate attempt to hold on to their position was driving and distorting their vision when it came to sin. Look over at John chapter 11, and let me get somebody to read verses 45 through 50. Jesus has just raised Lazarus from the dead, and John tells us that as a result of Jesus raising Lazarus, it brought a lot of belief to a lot of people. They saw what Jesus had done, and they put their faith in Him. Okay? But verse 45 through 50 tells us about another group. Okay? Many of those people put their faith in Jesus, but who's got the verse for the text for us? Okay. All right.
Then many of the Jews who had come to Myrrh and had seen the same Jesus deal believed in Him. But some of them went away to the Pharisees and told them the same Jesus deal. Then the chief priests and the Pharisees gathered a council and said, "What shall we do? For this man works many things. If we let him alone like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and take away both our place and nation." And one of them, being high priest that year, said to them, "You know nothing at all, nor do you consider that it is expedient for us that one man should die for the people, and not that the whole nation should perish."
What's that sound like? If we don't do something about this guy, the Romans are going to come and take away our place and our nation. It is expedient for us that one man should die rather than the whole nation. See, they had a real comfortable situation going. They liked it the way it was. And their fear was that if Jesus kept on going, then everything they had going for themselves was going to be lost. And so, therefore, they're so pleased to hear this now. Even if they have to divide the plan, even if they have to make stuff up, all through Jesus, whatever it takes, to hear it. Hey, we're willing to do it. You see, if you look at this whole situation and all the characters in this drama, Jesus was a threat to them. The law was useful to them. Okay? The woman was expendable. Therefore, sin by anyone involved was inconsequential. That's how they view sin. Inconsequential. The task is to get rid of Jesus. What we have to do it doesn't matter. We call that what? Sin.
He was just stopping and smiling himself.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He didn't really understand what it would say. It was better that one man would die than all of us perish, right? That was God's plan. And of course, he wasn't looking at it quite that way. All right. Real quickly here, let me finish this last part here. If they were concerned about sin, okay, if they really were truly concerned about sin, and especially the sin of this woman, then they would have sought to help her find victory over her sin, rather than simply use her as a pawn. Her sin was only important to them because it made her useful to them. Okay? And that brings us then to the question earlier with that, where was the man that she was caught in the very their concern for his sin, his involvement in all of this. You see, tunnel vision had put God so far out of their view that they could not even see their own sins. Okay? Their hearts were so corrupted that they attempted to use God's law to trap His Son. Now think about that. Surely a sin like that is more grave than that of adultery, is it not? When we stop seeing people as Jesus saw them, we're in danger of becoming like them. Okay? Okay? Next week we're going to take a look at, begin looking at, how did Jesus respond to this?